And last night, the Sir Peter Blake Leadership Awards were presented by Governor-General Dame Patsy Reddy and the Blake family at Government House. The awards, of course, acknowledge inspirational leaders in New Zealand who believe in achieving extraordinary things in the style of the late, great Sir Peter Blake. It's now nearly a decade since William Pike survived an eruption of Mount Ruapehu. The eruption cost William his right leg, but it didn't stop him from doing what he loves and developing a leadership program for youth. Blake Leader Award recipient William Pike is with us this morning. Kia ora, good morning, William, and congratulations.
Yeah, kia ora, Jack. Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's a real pleasure. And I know it's been a big 24 hours or so. How was last night?
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah, it completely surpassed my expectations. It was probably the flashiest event I've ever been to. had to get out there and get myself a wee tuxedo.
Yeah.
Oh. It really was, though. It was fantastic. Very, very inspiring. And I think I walked away last night thinking, gee, I even need a wee bit of inspiration for doing what I'm doing. Then I'll certainly look back to that night.
Yeah.
It was incredible. Yeah.
Did you get time in the moment to actually soak it in, or was it all kind of a blur?
I was a bit like a wedding day in a way.
Yeah.
It rushes by in a blur, but I do think it's important to just often kind of take these things in. So I'll certainly be doing a wee bit of daydreaming today just to suck up that moment last night and just what the whole evening meant, but also importantly the other Blake leaders that were there too, that was just great to see them and what they had achieved. And it's just one big great circle of inspiration as far as I'm concerned.
It's so nice to be able to celebrate good things, and especially in the media we focus so much on the negative stuff and stuff that isn't going well in the world, but it is a real pleasure to be able to celebrate some good things. And I wondered if you could start this morning by giving everyone a little bit of context and taking us back to 2007 and talking about the accident that changed your life.
Totally. Yeah, no, absolutely. So I've always been big into the outdoors, and I remember starting teachers' college and really turning up on my first day. Actually, I was a wee bit late. I was in my stubbies and my jandals and my singlet top there, and in the class was, I think, 30 women, and which was quite good to see, and one guy, James, who I became kind of best mates with through uni, and we did all these outdoor adventures, and I realised over the years that poor James had never touched snow or gone up into the mountains, so I'd done a number of seasons, so I invited him along for his very first mountaineering trip down to Mount Ruapehu, and that was, September 2007. And we had this grand plan to climb Mount Narahoe, Tongariro, and Ruapehu all in one go. And we were so young and full of beans and so excited to be there. And our first night we spent in a snow cave, which was really good fun. And that was on the slopes of the Whakapapa ski field. And the next day we went really high up towards the Crater Lake with the goal of getting to the very summit of Ruapehu. And on the way we dumped our bags into the dome shelter and kind of continued towards the summit a lot lighter, which was really good. And I remember walking past the Crater Lake, just looking into it and just thinking, wow, what a magic place this is. And a few hours later, we found ourselves heading back to the dome shelter unsuccessfully. We didn't summit that day, just the snow conditions were quite dangerous. And we had all these options up our sleeves. We had a snow shovel to build another cave. We had tents. But by the time we got back to where our bags were at the dome shelter, we just decided to take the easy option, as you do, and sleep in there. And at 20 past 8 at night, I felt a small kind of rumble, and I was lying on the floor next to James, half asleep. He was snoring away beside me. And, out of that, my other ear, I could hear this shake, and I sat up in my sleeping bag and listened, and all of a sudden the door of the dome shelter blew open with tremendous forces, kind of even carved off its hinges, I think it did. So I jumped up onto my knees in pitch darkness and skidded across the floor and grabbed the doorframe to look outside, and I could see Mount Ruapehu erupting. It was 1.5 million cubic metres of mud, water and rock. I think it's about the same as 600 Olympic-sized swimming pools that had been ejected out of there through a big gas eruption underneath the Crater Lake itself. And all this debris went kilometres into the air, then kind of came crashing down the entire dome shelter area and really summit area of Mount Zhurupayu. It was huge area wise, and burst into the hut. And I was, you know, it was horrific. I was yelling and screaming. These rocks were putting these great big holes through the floorboards, through the walls around me. And the worst thing of all was this water that just kind of kept pouring in. And amongst the water, I could feel my bones being broken and crunched in my legs. It was horrific. At the same time, it sounded like this jet plane out there with this roaring volcanic eruption. And then I was submerged in the hut. It's a bit of a strange thing, isn't it? You know, to be submerged on top of a mountain, yeah. You're going to drown. And luckily, the floorboards were so broken and crushed that I was able to, I don't know, the water was able to, yeah, to seep out through the floorboards, and I was able to breathe again. And it's probably about the time that James woke up, actually. He's a deep sleeper. yeah, I said, help, mate. You know, I think there's been an eruption. Can you come and get me free? And we need to get down this mountain real quick. So try as he did, you know, James, he couldn't get me free. I couldn't do it either. So we realised pretty quick that, you know, I was stuck. And you know, James was really sharp. He wasn't injured. And, you know, he made some really good calls to say, right, William, I'm going to run down the mountain and you're going to stay here. And I'll do my best to get some help. But, you know, you put yourself in poor James's shoes. Here's a bloke that has just been through a volcanic eruption of all things. He's never been on a mountain before. It's pitch black. And, you know, for him to leave that safety of the dome shelter was a big call. And he did do that. He ran down the mountain and he was able to raise the alarm. So he started the ball rolling for a massive chain of events, which I guess ultimately led to saving my life. But me up in the old dome shelter there, it was tough work. It was minus 8 degrees up there. And I remember sitting there with my arms kind of tucked under my armpits and just shivering away. And I was thinking to myself, you know, what on earth are my family and friends going to think when they hear this news that I died up on this mountain? That really kind of gutted me. And I had all these things I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to climb more mountains and go back into the classroom as I was teaching back then and do all the things you want to do when you kind of grow up. But it was just being kind of taken away from me. And there was nothing I could do about it except just not give up. So every time I pulled on that leg, I could feel the bones kind of pulling apart and crunching back together again. It was just horrific. And last thing I remember is looking at my watch, just trying to tell the time. But, you know, I was so cold up there and hypothermia had just gripped me. And that was it. Yeah, I remember just drifting off to sleep thinking that I was never, ever going to wake up again. So, yeah, it sure was tough. But, yeah, like I said, you know,
I mean, no, I'm sorry, that is just the most extraordinary story.
Every time I tell it, I look back and I do realise that, yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's not your typical story on how you lost a leg in a car accident or a motorbike or something like that. Something quite special about it in a way, and take pride in telling it.
So in the weeks and months that followed, I have this kind of theory about trauma, and I've got to level with it. I'm not someone who's ever been through anything that comes near to your sort of trauma, so I don't want to compare myself to you. But I remember thinking back to the Christchurch earthquake and covering some disasters in my time as a correspondent in America and around the world and stuff. And one thing that struck me was that in the immediacy of the moment, and maybe even in the weeks and first months that followed it, people seem to have a lot of adrenaline, and, you know, we always hear those words like resilience and that sort of thing. But it's actually down the line, it's 6 months down the line or a year down the line, that the adrenaline of the moment wears off, and that mentally, at least, those can be the most challenging times. Did you find that?
Yeah, 100%. I remember sitting in hospital, and I staring down at my legs, and one was a lot shorter than the other, and I realised I could probably throw a whole lot of excuses at the situation and not do too well, but it was, I guess, then I just made a decision just to fight, you know, and fight for what my life was worth, and just to make the most of it. And, you know, I did have to, you know, talk to friends and family to kind of keep an even keel, otherwise I perhaps could have gone into that kind of dark place. But for me, I think the key was, you know, just that kind of positive thinking and being really set on my goals and what I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to climb again. I wanted to walk again. I wanted to return to the workplace. And as far as I was concerned, nothing was going to get in the way.
Yeah.
And when I did have a tough day, because let's face it, you know, I'm only human and we all have really tough days, It was just a matter of, you know, talking it through and getting help when you need it, and just kind of soldiering on. But, you know, I promised myself that I'd get my life back on track after that. I tell you what, I had absolutely no idea how I was going to do it, and I was pretty damn scared about it. But sometimes you just got to go for it, you know. So yeah, that's what I did.
So you've continued climbing. This is amazing. You have continued climbing, and you have an artificial leg that you attach, and you have to make some concessions when you're climbing. I wondered if you could tell us, though, a little bit about your experience adventuring in Antarctica.
Yeah, what an amazing trip. So I was extremely lucky to be invited by the Antarctic Heritage Trust down to Antarctica at the start of this year, and that trust's all about inspiring young people to explore and about looking after historic places down there. And our job was to explore the Antarctic Peninsula, but also climb Mount Scott, named after Sir Robert Falcon Scott. And I knew going down there that it was probably going to be one of the toughest and perhaps longest climbs that I had ever done. I was expecting in excess of kind of like 12 hours in terms of up and down, and I think the most I'd done on my prosthetic leg in one day was about 10 hours. So I put in a whole lot of preparation, getting fit, walking up and down the street, my backpack on, through the bush and all sorts to get there. And there was four of us, four young Kiwis, and we had a couple of guys go with us, and we flew from Auckland to Buenos Aires down to Ushuaia, and then jumped on this enormous 117-meter icebreaker, which for me, that was an adventure in itself. And we bashed our way through the Drake Passage, and I was actually hoping that it would be a bit rougher, to be fair, but it was probably about maybe 4 or 5 meter swells the whole way, where the previous trip had about 20, so it can just get really, really wild. And the bird life was incredible. And first day we pulled up into the Antarctica or Lemaire Channel there. It was terrible weather. It was just low cloud. It was quite miserable. And it was odd because here we were. We traveled, halfway around the world. We had this 48-hour window to climb this mountain. We didn't even know if we could get onto the continent because of the glaciation changes all the time. And here we were being zoomed over these zodiacs about to step onto the continent for the first time. And I suppose you feel quite lonely down there because there ain't no search and rescue down there that's going to get you if you have any problems. I was a bit of a nightmare to ensure to get down there in the first place. And I guess away we went, and we negotiated our way through this kind of crevasse minefield for about 5 hours. And I was thinking to myself, we're going to be back at the ship for lunch because there's no way we can continue in this. But amazingly, what happened was we actually climbed through the cloud above it into this spectacular bluebird day, and we continued on, and we managed to get up on top of Mount Scott at about 8 o'clock at night on the 18th of February this year, and it was the most extraordinary view and place that I'd ever seen in my life. And what really summed it up for me was one of the guides with us. He'd been climbing for 30 years and climbed hundreds of peaks, tough little bloke, and he was crying, so it's just like, wow. This was just spectacular. And from there, I guess, only halfway, and we had quite a trip back down in the dark through the fog again, back to the beach. And it was an 18-hour round trip that will stand strong in my mind as perhaps one of the greatest adventures ever that I've done.
That is amazing, William. So, hey, just we're running out of time, but just a couple of things I really quickly wanted to cover off with you. Can you tell us a little bit about the award you've set up, the William Pike Challenge Award?
Yeah, absolutely. So the William Pike Challenge Award, it's a youth development program, and I guess the vision of ours is just to have a world full of explorers, and that's in every sense of the word in terms of kids learning about themselves, local people, local places. And I really love empowering youth to explore those new places, relationships and skills. And what we do is we provide support and resources and motivation to educators out there so that they can get their students across the space of a year doing 5 outdoor activities. They do 20 hours of community service, and they do passion projects. And the age group that we work in is the year 7 to 9s, and it's almost a perfect kind of lead into the Duke of Edinburgh's the reward is there, the kind of year 9 and up. And we're a growing We Social Enterprise. We've got 60 schools that are doing the program with us so far, and I've got a goal of 100 by 2019, and our market share's tiny. There's, you know, there's over 1,500 schools out there. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to growing and to getting some assistance to scale up and really deliver on our kind of impact of developing young Kiwi explorers. So I'm really passionate about it and love it.
William, it is such a pleasure to speak with you, and I cannot think of a more deserving recipient of the Blake Leader Award. William's website is williampike.co.nz. William's book is Every Day is a Good Day. He is, of course, in charge of the William Pike Challenge Award for young people. And William, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your time this morning. Honestly, I could speak to you for hours. It's just you really are an inspiration, so thank you.
Anytime, mate.
Good on you, William. That is William Pike, the winner last night of the Blake Leader Award, or Leadership Award.